All right, guys. Hi everyone, how you doing? Welcome to the Trim Radio Network or trimradio.com. Christ God, this is a great show. I love doing it's Life Walk with Christ God. There's always going to be a time in your life that you make that decision. Usually when you get older, when everything breaks down, when bad things happen, and then you realize, okay, I've tried everything else. And I want to do something different. I want to do something new. Very interesting. And the reason I'm talking about this today is we're going to be reading from Ecclesiastes today. Now, Ecclesiastes is, nobody's really sure who wrote Ecclesiastes. We have theories that Solomon wrote it and Solomon said it, and it was inspired by his words, his wisdom and everything. But let's take a look at it. Ecclesiastes is a collective words of teacher or preacher, which is oloka, meaning that. And I doesn't mean I'm pronouncing that right. But the teacher is described as having been a king over Israel in Jerusalem and the son of David. Both of these mean that he was in the royal line of Judah. It's not further identified if it was actually Solomon that did, that did this. He is not further identified, and while tradition identifies him with Solomon, it is appropriate to leave this cloak of anonymity in place. The repeated phrase, meaningless, warns us that our life's rewards are uncertain and ultimately unsatisfying. And why is that? Have you ever noticed when things are going great, we do a couple of things as human beings. First of all, we stop giving praise, glory to God because we're satisfied. So, yeah, need to hear from us, right? We get into this habit. But then sometimes we want more. We always want more. And why is that? Why are we not satisfied? Paul mentions many times, I know what it's like to be hungry. I know what it's like to be abased. I know, and he writes this. He's comfortable no matter what position he is in. But everybody else in the world still doesn't get that. So they want more. They want more and more and more and more, and then your heart gets corrupted. And the things that you're asking for, I know Christ says, hey, whatever you ask for, knock. My Father will, he will give it. Knock on the door, invite us in. Let us be a part of your life. Let us be there. And whatever you ask of him, he'll give it. But the most key important thing is, it has to be a precious thing that is an honest, a righteous thing from God. If you're going to sit here and ask God for a lottery ticket or the numbers on that, I'm sorry, you're going to still be wanting more and more and more. It's not something that is in the interest of holiness and of God. So we get trapped in this thing that what are we asking for? And then you get people that are honest to pray, God, please bring me healing, bring peace to the world, or bring this. And again, we don't do that either. And the reason that I'm bringing this up is I found myself in this a lot of times. I'd be asking for more, and I'm thinking, but these things that I'm asking for aren't worth anything to begin with. Why am I asking for these things? The things that we should be asking God for is, God, give us more knowledge about you. Give us more information on you, how to become closer, to draw to you. And as I look at today, and I look at the world today, and I've become very, discouraged. And this discouragement is really simply a frustration because everything that's going on, I don't know if you've noticed or not, but every video, there's some guy on there in this video, he's got some secret thing. Did you see the signs? Did you see this? Let me tell you what it is. And he's got all the answers, a regular guy. And he's got all the answers, and he's going to tell you what this means, what that means, and everything else, how these things are going to come true. Oh, boy, we got to look out. The rapture's coming. It's going to happen on this day. Today being a perfect example. We went back to 2012. It was going to happen then. Then it was going to be back in Y2K, 2000. And before that, it was going to happen. According to all these people, filled with all this wisdom that all these people followed, the earth has come and gone like five times, six times in my lifetime. And God was clear. He was clear in Matthew. He said, listen, I don't know the date. I don't know the time. Only my Father knows that. That's it. But you will see me. I will come down, descending upon a cloud. You will hear the trumpet. Hey, be ready. That's it. There's your clue. That's as far as you're going to know. He gives you maybe another little clue that maybe when the figs are starting to blossom and bloom. That's it. He doesn't tell you anything. There is no secret here to find a date or a time for this. But everyone loves to get on the internet, and they love to get on the reels, and they love to get on this for attention for their own self. They're not doing it for the glory of God. They are doing it for themselves. And they're spreading these lies. They're spreading these untruths. They're spreading all this stuff that is not true. And if you ask them, they're cherry-picking areas that absolutely is frustrating, because you're like, well, wait, that doesn't mean that at all. You're taking parts of one part, mixing it together with another part, trying to make a point so somebody sees it your way. It's one of the most selfish things that we can do, instead of just the way of the truth, which Christ has provided you. Which God has provided you. And it's frustrating when you see this. All the time, all these people talking about, well, they got Charlie, they did this, they did that. You know, they set him up, it's the Mossad, it's this group, it's that group. Listen, we have some sick individuals in this world, and they took a good man's life. I didn't know the guy. But I'm going to tell you something. I've watched people in the last week gloat over his death. I have watched people say that he spits out hatred and rhetoric and all this other stuff. I did not know him. I've only seen a few things of him talking about the Bible, and the Word of God and what he's saying in there. And people have to remember, the Bible is open to a lot of interpretation. A lot. I mean, how you see things, how I see things might not line up, but it still doesn't change the fact. Paul, Luke, Mark, John, Peter, Matthew, all the different books don't exactly line up together as far as word for word. It's all in their own perspectives, but the facts never change. That's the fact. It never changed, and it never will, and it can't, because the events took place. So when you see these people on the internet, and when you see them out within the world, And everybody has this secret thing that props them up, that they know better than anybody else. And it's known, but they're going to share it with you. I laugh because you know what? The book has been here. Oh my gosh. I mean, think about it. It's been over three continents, Asia, Africa, Europe, three different languages, Greek, Aramaic, and Latin, and written by over 40 people. I believe 39 of them were Jewish and one was not. And then on top of that, over a span of 1,500 years. It's not a hidden book. Everybody has access to it. That's the whole point of it. So there is nothing that is not known to everybody who wants to see it, to make known. That's the beauty of how God set this up. That's the beauty. That's everything that Christ has done. There's an old covenant and a new covenant. Everything that has happened, from the prophets to everybody else, from all the witnesses throughout the world, nothing is hidden. It's right there out in the open. So when you see these videos on there, and everything's a video now, it no more is it just for the good of man. It's all these videos they'll take. It's either people fighting online. It's people talking about how to get somebody back because of what they said about Charlie Kirk. It's all political. It's political. It's garbage. These are the things that the whole reason for the sower of the seed parable that Christ gives in Matthew. You know, first the seeds drop off on the ground and right away they're scooped up. Satan grabs them. And what do we know about Satan? He comes to steal. What does he do? He lies, steals, destroys. Steal, kill, and destroy. So in that aspect of him doing that, the first thing he does is steal away those people. The next ones, hey, they fall on a rock. And you know, they're starting to come on up. They look like they're pretty happy about it. But they fall away for whatever reason. They're not invested. So they become scorched. Boom, they're gone. The next group, hey, guess what? You know, they fall into the ground into thickets and to thorns. So they come up. Oh, yeah, man, they're ready to go. This is great. I love it and everything like that. But then the troubles of this world, the internet, the people, all the wars, rumors of wars. We've got one guy over there who says he's Christ. So he's walking around. He's not going to be the first. He's not going to be the last. God warned us of this. Christ warned us of this. He even makes it clear. They're going to say, here I am. There he is. He's over here. He's over there. It's not true. He tells you how he's coming back. He makes it clear. But everybody seems to have forgotten that. So what happens? The people that are supposed to come up get choked out by worldly affairs. And then they lose their way. And then you have the good seed that falls on the ground. Now it sprouts. It comes up. It takes hold. Because they start to see the world for what it is, not their home. And guess what? They bear much fruit. And they talk to others. And they get others to understand. And they end up saving people through Christ. God uses them as a tool through God. Just, I want you here. You need to be here at this spot at this time. And he's not going to tell you. He just makes it happen. This person needs encouragement. This person needs love. This person or these people. I'm giving you a purpose. And it's hard to find our purpose. Oh, man, it's frustrating. And I find myself, I went to the Greek Fest, and I got inside the church, and Sherry had never been inside of a Greek church. And she was just, we're looking at the pictures, and I'm showing her, I said, the hand paintings that you see inside the church. And understand something. I follow a spiritual relationship with God. I'm not condemning any church. I'm not condemning anything like that. For me, after being sick, having the illnesses that I have, I try to just sit at home. I pray to God to give me knowledge, to give me wisdom. And a lot of times, if I can't find that knowledge or wisdom, or I have confusion, I have a brother who is in the church all the time. I'll ask him, or I'll ask the pastor, email him or whatever. I don't always get a response, but I'll do that. Either way, I will try to find the answers to the questions that I need answered. Because a lot of stuff is very, it's got all these different levels on what the interpretations can be. So it's hard to have that discernment. God gives us that. We know this because in the spiritual gifts that are given out, and it is Galatians 12, where Paul is talking about the spiritual gifts and giving them out. It's amazing because it's still coming from the same Spirit. It's still one Spirit. But the wonderful thing about it is that we pray for information. We do this. So we're in this church, getting back to where I was. We're in this church. And Sherry is just, she goes, it's just beautiful in here. And she goes, you could just feel the wonderful, you know, energy. And I said, absolutely. So as we're doing this and going through it, of course, they have the wonderful pictures, hand-painted, beautiful artwork. I watched this church get built from the ground up since living here in South Carolina. I watched them putting the dome on this thing. Absolutely just, it was mesmerizing just watching this and watching it come to fruition. And the beauty of it was is that it has served Columbia well and helped people and been fantastic and just an asset to the community. It's a glimmer of hope. It's love. The same with all the churches out there. They build your hope, they build your faith, they build your love. Always within inside the church, you're always going to have maybe good, maybe bad, but that's it. But it's a foundation. And that's a good thing to build on in life. It's a foundation of Christ God. Anyway, as we're going through this, and I'm showing you the pictures, Jonah and the fish, we're showing up. The pictures, the hand-painted pictures of the baptism of John. And you could see the detail as it's coming down. There's the dove coming down on John. And we leave, and I'm watching everybody. They're on their phones. They're watching videos. And you can't even get on Reels anymore because all these people have these things that they know about some secret inside information on God. New books now, the Book of Enoch, and it's not even a new book. It's an old book, Book of Enoch. Did you know it says this? Those things are distractions, okay? They're like horoscopes. They're like, hey, you're born in January, you're an Aquarius. There's so much more. Lottery tickets and everything else, and what are they? These are divination things. These are things that are not good. They're you want to call them demonic. I call them distractions. And the reason that I say that is because it's taking you off of the course of what the Bible really was for. I've said this God knows how many times on here. The Bible is the greatest true love story that was ever written. And the word true cannot be emphasized enough. I've had people in my life that said, oh, God hates me. God's mad at me. I've had other people say, I don't think there is a God. I've had people say that, well, I don't understand why he'd let people get sick. There's this book. It's called the Bible. If you open it, if you read it, welcome, God says, thou shalt not commit murder, but yet he does. Why? God is just in everything he does. There is nothing. It's us. It's not him. We are the problem. And why? Because we do the same things over and over and over again throughout our entire existence. Which is why I wanted to bring us to Ecclesiastes. So now that we got this all covered, you're going to see the repeated phrase, meaningless, meaningless. Everything is meaningless. Warns us that life's rewards are uncertain and ultimately unsatisfying. If we could come to grips with that thought process just 1 second, then we could ask ourselves some real questions about us. I call it being able to look deep into the abyss, into the mirror, into yourself, and saying, what am I bringing to the table? Positive or negative? Doesn't matter what anybody else is doing. What about am I doing? That's the most important thing. The teacher pursues this insight in a long discourse that shifts between prose and poetry and between autobiography and straightforward teaching. The book's observations and poses questions returning to themes like the wind, round and round it goes, ever returning on its course. Then the teacher said, what is crooked cannot be straightened. He reminds us that something wrong has intruded our world. Something wrong has intruded our world. Other than us? What intruded the world? What did Christ say? I watched him fall like lightning. Satan. We have that here. And Christ said, soon the prince of this world. He knows what he is. He's the dark prince of this world. He's got three things on his agenda. Steal, kill, and destroy. And a lot of people said, well, why? Why does he want to do that? And why can't God forgive him? There's a couple great questions in there. First of all, why can't God forgive Satan? Why not? Well, looking at it, and of course, we can't always say that we're right, no matter what. Understand, our thinking is not on the same level as God's thinking. Our understanding is not the same level of his understanding. Our knowledge is not the same. Our brains are like this big. And we're going to compare it to the most powerful, greatest, I mean, just God outside of everything, time, space, matter. No. So, but this is what I see, is I see in my own interpretation, and maybe yours is different. Satan, created by God, this beautiful angel, and he's given this beautiful ability to play musical instruments and everything else. Either somehow, I don't know, got a glimpse, thought of himself more than he ought, but then he goes whispering in the ears of other angels to the tune of 1/3 of the angel's fall. Okay? But where did he commit that sin? Where was this atrocity, this betrayal, committed? On the holy of most holy grounds, places, heaven. No, he's not going to be forgiven. Did God forgive Nadab and Moses and Aaron's other son in the tent when they were offering the incense and everything to God? No. And he consumed them with fire. Now, Aaron was the high priest. We know this. And of course, they got consumed. This is in Exodus. And Moses is like, you got to straightforward. Do not turn to the right. Do not turn to the left. And they did. But why? Because they were in the most holy of holy places, inside the tabernacle, where is the tent of meeting with God coming to us. So that's why they're not going to be forgiven. They did that. It's choice. God's burdens, God's decrees, statutes, covenants, yokes are light compared to what this world offers us. But why are we stuck in this trap? And I keep going back. When the teacher says, what is crooked cannot be straightened. So we know what we have in this world, but why are we focused on here? Is it because we are here? Is it because we cannot see into the future and we cannot have hopes and dreams of a place that doesn't have all this garbage? Or is it the things that we have? Is it those things? You know, and people don't understand. I have a cross. It's a beautiful cross. It's wonderful. It's pretty. It's beautiful. It can't save me. It can't do a thing for me. It is just a symbol that I follow Jesus Christ. It has no power. It can't do a thing. Okay? There's nothing that it can do. Only Christ God can do that. That's it. This thing wields nothing. It's just my outward expression to others. I follow Jesus Christ, God Almighty. And maybe it'll bring up a conversation to somebody that doesn't, and they're curious about it. And there is my opening. There's my chance to do what God put me here, a purpose. And maybe that person's going through a lot. Maybe that person is struggling. But we have to be strong. We have to be courageous. We have to take those steps. Otherwise, we could walk away and something bad happens to that person we don't even know about. We could be like, okay, well, you know, I knew nothing about it. But you're responsible about it because you have a job to do. We just have to figure out what our job is. It's hard to do that. I'm still trying to figure it all out. But nothing new under the sun. And this is what I try to get people to understand. When you see these videos, when you see all this, there is nothing new. Nothing new. Nothing from today that wasn't done yesterday that won't be done tomorrow until Christ comes. Nobody can name one thing. It is impossible to name one thing. What is new from yesterday to today? Show me. Prove me wrong. Because there is nothing new. The only thing is the enhancement of evil. Okay? But the good is always here. The good is never changing because it's love, it's hope, it's faith. These things, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, whatever is beautiful, whatever is admirable. I mean, if you look at all these things, those things are a solid foundation. They don't change. Evil is an ever-growing pill of just poison that will come up with new crafty scheming ways of deceiving people. So let's get into it now. And of course, the teacher Aaron does not tell us about God's attempts at straightening the world. He is content to say that God is the sovereign over all things, and it is our duty to follow his ways for living. Since God will bring every deed into judgment. That's it. That's the thing that we have to be prepared for. We have to understand that everything that you do, the least stroke of a pen, anything that you say, every single thing that we do, we have to be prepared because we will give an answer. You might not think, well, we won't, but we should. Look at the way we've lived our lives. I'm horrified. Going back now, looking back over my life and looking at the way I lived it, compared to the way that I'm trying to correct all that, I'm mourning for the mistakes that I made and asking for repentance for those mistakes. And I'm not mourning my the death of somebody. I'm mourning my sin because I know I've done it. So the only thing that I could do is ask for forgiveness. It doesn't guarantee he's going to give forgiveness. We have to be better. We have to walk. We have to be better. But let's get into this so that we can move on, because this is really cool. And I just love this part.
Book of Ecclesiastes, chapter 1. The words of the teacher, son of David, king in Jerusalem. Meaningless, meaningless, says the teacher, utterly meaningless. Everything is meaningless. What do people gain from all their labors at which they toil under the sun? Generations come and generations go, but the earth remains forever. Sun rises and the sun sets and hurries back to where it rises. The wind blows to the south and turns to the north. Round and round it goes, ever returning on its course. All streams flow into the sea, yet the sea is never full. To the place the streams come from, there they return again. All things are wearisome, more than one can say. The eye never has enough of seeing, or the ear its fill of hearing. What has been will be again. What has been done will be done again. There is nothing new under the sun. Is there anything of which one can say, look, this is something new? It was here already long ago. It was here before our time. No one remembers the former generations, and even those yet to come will not be remembered by those who follow them. I, the teacher, was king over Israel in Jerusalem. I applied my mind to study and to explore by wisdom all that is done under the heavens. What a heavy burden God has laid on mankind. I have seen all the things that are done under the sun. All of them are meaningless, a chasing after the wind. What is crooked cannot be straightened. What is lacking cannot be counted. I said to myself, look, I have increased in wisdom more than anyone who has ruled over Jerusalem before me. I have experienced much wisdom and knowledge. Then I applied myself to the understanding of wisdom and also of madness and folly. But I learned that this too is a chasing after the wind. For with much wisdom comes much sorrow. The more knowledge, the more
grief. And why is that? What is he telling us? The smarter that we get, given wisdom that God gives us as in age and everything else, then you realize this is not where you want to be anyway, because nothing's going to change. Look at the politics today. Look at all the distractions today. I mean, what does it really do for you? How has it been beneficial at all? These people are no different than the Pharisees, the Sadducees, the Sanhedrin. They're crooked. Okay. They're crooked. And day after day. And I look at it too. He's also talking about us when he says the streams go on over and they fill the oceans and they never have enough. That's like us. We never have enough. We never have any of this. And what a heavy burden that God has laid upon mankind. I have seen all the things that are done under the sun. All of them are meaningless, a chasing after the wind. And that's because nothing will change. It's up to us to decide what to change in life, where we stand. There's only two sides to this. That's it. Follow God. Don't follow God. And that ends up in a bad result. I mean, it's a choice. We have a choice. It's called free will. But nothing really is different. I mean, Solomon, you have to understand, didn't ask for gold. Solomon didn't ask for money. Solomon didn't ask for any type of riches at all. He didn't ask for slaves. He didn't ask for lambs, goats, sheep, or anything. He asked God for one thing. Give me knowledge. Let me learn you. Give me knowledge. And of course, he ended up the richest out of anyone because God said, because you have asked for knowledge and not for personal gain, not for anything that is crooked, he was blessed beyond all his imagination. But it still didn't change the fact that nothing done yesterday, today, or tomorrow will ever be different. There's still crookedness in the world. There's still all these things that we have to face until we come to the conclusion that this is not our home. It's not. It was never meant to be. We saw this. This was mapped out a long time ago. I mean, God is perfect. He knew all of this. If he knows all things like he says, and he does, like I believe, inside of space, time, space, and matter. He's in, out of it, around it, through it, and everything else. He knew all this. He knew exactly how this is going to go down. He knows exactly what's going to come and why. So that we're prepared. So that when we get to the promised land that God has promised us in heaven, that we're worthy to walk on the most holy of holy grounds, that we are worthy to be around God, that's the whole point of all this. So we look at this, and I see this. It's absolutely incredible, but I love his wisdom on it. And I love how this goes. So let's go on to the next one.
Grief. Ecclesiastes 2. I said to myself, come now, I will test you with pleasure to find out what is good. But that also proved to be meaningless. Laughter, I said, is madness. And what does pleasure accomplish? I tried cheering myself with wine and embracing folly, my mind still guiding me with wisdom. I wanted to see what was good for people to do under the heavens during the few days of their lives. I undertook great projects. I built houses for myself and planted vineyards. I made gardens and parks and planted all kinds of fruit trees in them. I made reservoirs to water groves of flourishing trees. I bought male and female slaves and had other slaves who were born in my house. I also owned more herds and flocks than anyone in Jerusalem before me. I amassed silver and gold for myself and the treasure of kings and provinces. I acquired male and female singers and a harem as well, the delights of a man's heart. I became greater by far than anyone in Jerusalem before me. In all this, my wisdom stayed with me. I denied myself nothing my eyes desired. I refused my heart no pleasure. My heart took delight in all my labor, and this was the reward for all my toil. Yet when I surveyed all that my hands had done and what I had toiled to achieve, everything was meaningless. A chasing after the wind. Nothing was gained under the sun.
All these things, and he was still not happy. Oh, I mean, he had it all. You heard him. He had it all. He chased it all. He delighted in it all. But guess what? It still wasn't enough. And in the end, those things that he has, who's he going to leave them to? Can he guarantee that the things that he has, and when he is gone, they're going to go into somebody's good, somebody's hands that's going to do good? Or are they going to end up in somebody's hands who does evil? Are they going to be used for good? Is it going to be used for evil? Are they going to... That's why nothing is, it doesn't change. So here we go. Let's continue on.
Then I turned my thoughts to consider wisdom and also madness and folly. What more can the king's successors do than what has already been done? I saw that wisdom is better than folly, just as light is better than darkness. The wise have eyes in their heads, while the fool walks in the darkness. But I came to realize that the same fate overtakes them both. Then I said to myself, the fate of the fool will overtake me also. What then do I gain by being wise? I said to myself, this too is meaningless. For the wise, like the fool, will not be long remembered. The days have already come when both have been forgotten. Like the fool, the wise too must die. So I hated life, because the work that is done under the sun was grievous to me. All of it is meaningless, the chasing after the wind. I hated all the things I had toiled for under the sun, because I must leave them to the one who comes after me. And who knows whether that person will be wise or foolish. Yet they will have control over all the fruit of my toil, into which I have poured my effort and skill under the sun. This too is meaningless. So my heart began to despair over all my toilsome labor under the sun. For a person may labor with wisdom, knowledge, and skill, and then they must leave all they own to another who has not toiled for it. This too is meaningless and a great misfortune. What do people get for all the toil and anxious striving with which they labor under the sun? All their days, their work is grief and pain. Even at night, their minds do not rest. This too is meaningless.
And you can understand, and of course Solomon was so wise. People came throughout all the regions, all throughout all the world, to sit and talk with him. They're bringing him gifts because of his knowledge. And he's absolutely right. You know, going back to it, he was absolutely right. Everything that I've done, it's not going to be remembered that it was done by me, number one. I'll be here and I'll be gone. And who knows how long this stuff will last? Is it going to be somebody that's going to take care of it anyway? It's things. It's worthless anyhow. And I worked hard for it. I toiled for it. I've got nothing but anxiety here. I can't sleep at night. I mean, this is us. This is what we're going through today. We have so many mental health problems. We have so many people that are anxious. They don't sleep at night. Guess what? I don't sleep at night. I could tell you, you're going to pass away. We all are. Good, bad, you're going to pass away. And you know what? For the first month, people will be mourning. After 6 months, they'll have maybe a get-together. After a year, year and a half, maybe they'll have some type of a reunion or whatever. And then after about 5 years, they'll forget, unless somebody else comes along and reminds them, hey, you remember this? And why are they reminding him? Well, for gain, for something else. They killed him and he was innocent and they did this. But really, ask yourself, if you passed on, how many people are going to carry on your memory? are going to remember you and love you and pass it on. The next generation won't. You're gone. It's you're gone. Your time was here. Your time was up. The mark that you left is not a mark that stays here. You could try to do everything right, and you could get everything wrong. You could do everything wrong and get everything right. It's meaningless. He's right. And it's frustrating. And you're going to have all this anxiety and everything. Don't be anxious for anything. Don't be anxious for anything. I've gotten to that point in life that I'd sit here and I was worried about every single thing. I was panicked. I deal with panic attacks, depression, stress. I am bipolar. And then I just was like, it's not going to do me a bit of good. It's not going to do a thing. And all these things here, it's who cares? They're just things. I mean, there's really nothing new. And the events that happened in this time have already happened back then. And back then, they're happening again now. You would think people would learn. They're not going to learn. Okay, you choose to better yourself by following God, by being obedient, by observing his statutes, his decrees. It's when we make our own choices and our own mistakes, I mean, we're our own worst enemies. We always have been, which is terrible. Okay, so here we go. Let's get this, make sure I got this right here. Every once in a while. So let's get right back into it, and here we go.
Obstruction in their own toil. This too, I see, is from the hand of God, for without him, who can eat or find enjoyment? To the person who pleases him, God gives wisdom, knowledge, and happiness. But to the sinner, he gives the task of gathering and storing up wealth to hand it over to the one who pleases God. This too is meaningless, a chasing after the wind. Ecclesiastes 3. There is a time for everything, and a season for every activity under the heavens, a time to be born and a time to die, a time to plant and a time to uproot, a time to kill and a time to heal, a time to tear down and a time to build, a time to weep and a time to laugh, a time to mourn and a time to dance, a time to scatter stones and a time to gather them, a time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing, a time to search and a time to give up, a time to keep and a time to throw away, a time to tear and a time to mend, a time to be silent and a time to speak, a time to love and a time to hate, a time for war and a time for peace. What do workers gain from their toil? I have seen the burden God has laid on the human race. He has made everything beautiful in its time. He's also set eternity in the human heart. Yet no one can fathom what God has done from beginning to end. I know that there's nothing better for people than to be happy and to do good while they live, that each of them may eat and drink and find satisfaction in all their toil. This is the gift of God. I know that everything God does will endure forever. Nothing can be added to it and nothing taken from it. God does it so that people will fear him. Whatever is has already been, and what will be has been before, and God will call the past to account. And I saw something else under the sun. In the place of judgment, wickedness was there. In the place of justice, wickedness was there. I said to myself, God will bring into judgment both the righteous and the wicked, for there will be a time for every activity, a time to judge every deed. I also said to myself, As for humans, God tests them so that they may see that they are like the animals. Surely the fate of human beings is like that of the animals. The same fate awaits them both. As one dies, so dies the other. All have the same breath. Humans have no advantage over animals. Everything is meaningless. All go to the same place. All come from dust, and to dust all return. Who knows if the human spirit rises upward and if the spirit of the animal goes down into the earth? So I saw that there is nothing better for a person than to enjoy their work, because that is their lot. For who can bring them to see what will happen after them?
And you can see that Solomon is filled with much sorrow, probably depressed, I can only assume, and everything else, because he has a true grasp of this reality. Of and everything that he's saying, a time to do this, a time to do that, a time to refrain, a time to do this, it's all the same. It will always be the same. We try to live the best lives that we can, obedient to God, obedient to Christ, live with the statutes, commands, decrees that he has set forth for us to do. Make your very best effort, and every day try to pass that effort and keep going. Catch yourself doing the things that you used to do in the past and cut it off. Say, no, I recognize this. And you're going to do that the rest of your life. And most importantly, pick up the book. How hard is it? You can read novels. You can read murder mysteries. You can watch television shows that bring you absolutely nothing. They bring nothing, no knowledge to you. They don't bring anything to the table. Or you can read a God-inspired living word that he has provided you, a basic instruction before leaving earth. What have you got to lose? When these people say, I don't believe in God and I don't do this, but you believe in this other stuff and you're going to say, I don't believe in God. And then I ask myself, then how would you know what you believe in to begin with? Don't make excuses. Don't do that. We have enough of that in the world today. I don't care if you're good or bad. Guess what? You're going to die. You're going to be called into account. We all are. I am. Be fearful. I know I am. How am I going to explain everything in my life that I have done? I can't even come up with one rational excuse from one sin to the next. I don't have it. And you know what? There is none. There is none. Except I messed up. Forgive me. Please. I told you, the biggest fear that you can have in this world is Christ God saying, I never knew you. That's the scariest part. Well, listen, I'm going to leave you with that. Just don't be scared. Don't be afraid. Nothing that's happening today hasn't already happened. And nothing today in the future, guess what? It'll be the same deal. And then they'll look back and they'll say, man, it's been the same as today, tomorrow, yesterday. Okay. The only thing that is the most stable thing from today, tomorrow, or yesterday is Christ. He doesn't change. That's the one sure bet. The one sure, glorious, wonderful thing. Not thing, just being that is worth anything. Christ God. With that, God bless. I wish you all a great week. Relax. Follow him. Follow his word. Enjoy it. Like I said, it's the greatest love story in the world. It absolutely is. There's nothing that compares to it. And I enjoy it. I enjoy it every day. So, Father God, what do you got to lose? You, while you're alive, you have nothing to lose. When you're dead, you got everything to lose. So pick up a book, read, and then don't stop. Read every day the rest of your life. Take care, guys.